Chapter 22. The Anathema's Daughters. Only in death does duty end. Sunrise. Arkan Land watched as Zephon fired his last shot and ducked back into the darkness of the tank's interior to reload. The spent magazine clattered to the deck as he slapped a new one home. Hauling himself back up into the cupola, the Blood Angel braced again and opened fire once more. The techno-archaeologist, his face bleached with scrolling view-screen data, veered the tank in a slow arc. Volkite cannons squealed in a rhythmic discord. Small arms fire rained against the blessedly reinforced ceramite hull, reduced by the dense plating to dull bangs. The Grav Raider's interior reeked with the porcine scent of burned gore. Wounded sisters and custodians lay across the deck of the hold, too injured to keep fighting. Lan suspected several of them were already dead. Zephon ducked back into the tank and slammed the cupola closed. "I'm out of ammunition," he stated. His eyes glimmered with what Lan suspected, quite correctly, was battle lust, a rather primitive emotion that the Martian thankfully had no experience with whatsoever. The Blood Angel locked his bolter to hip with a thumbed activation of magnetic seals. He crouched by one of the injured sisters, who clutched the stump of her arm against her chest. The severance of her left arm was the least of her wounds, if the running of blood beneath her was anything to go by. Something had gone badly wrong inside her during the battle. "A sword through the guts, most likely," thought Land. "A pathetic way to die. A death worthy of a primate in Terra's stone era." He loathed the female warriors, and couldn't for the life of him fathom why. They were private, yes, but seemed agreeable enough. Yet merely looking at them made his skin crawl. Being near enough to smell one of them, or, Omnisia forbid, accidentally come into contact with one of them, was enough to make his bile rise. He was even more careful not to stare towards the enemy. The Raider's automated and servitor-manned Volkite array was more than capable of responding to threats. The last time Arkan had looked too long out across the enemy horde, he'd been unable to summon speech for several minutes. No aliens, no matter their world of origin, walked as a host of blade-bearing, cyclopean corpses able to ignore the butchery of their own flesh. Many of the horned, grave-born entities seemed animated from imperial dead. Shattered plates of golden armor still tumbled from their bloated flesh. Zephon aided the sister with her wound bindings. His metal hands twitched, but not enough to ruin his efforts. Land knew that the cure, such as it was, wouldn't last long. It was too hasty, too fragile, fixed as it was to the back of the Blood Angel's neck and crudely drill-locked into the meat beneath the armor, to say nothing of the cables and wires running along the outside of his ceramite to link in 50 places across each forearm. Land had used a biometric current regulator of the kind used to dampen agony twitches in auto-reductor cyborgs. He'd ripped it right from the rib bracing of a slain thalax. It effectively blocked any sign of their inner spasms from translating visibly to their robotic bodies. Reversing its purpose and amplifying its sensitivity was no leap of genius. It was a fundamental principle in the technology used by the very wealthy of many worlds in rectifying muscle wastage and paralysis. Still, Land felt a kernel of pride in his jury-rigged battlefield solution. Fragile as the cure might be, the Blood Angel had been firing his bolter with murderous precision. "This isn't even language," Land said, a hand at his earpiece. "Cease listening to them," said Zephon. Land offered a withering look by way of reply. Sweat had turned his clothing rank and his skin sour. He kept licking his dry lips to no avail. Land guided the raider into a whirring skid, aggravating its anti-grav plates. He scanned the last of the convoy, seeing damaged vehicles drifting into the curling golden mist. On this side of the gateway, the Mechanicum's ingenuity was masterfully bolted in layers of gleaming metal over the plain hideousness of the original ancient artistry. The arch itself was carved from a material resembling ivory, marked by silver runes in no known language. Even as Land watched a tracked conveyor crawl through, three skimmers bearing carders of Silent Sisters raced back out. If ever there was a time for reinforcements, it was now. The raider glided between the other advancing tanks, turning and returning to the crash of the front lines grinding against one another. Spear-wielding male warriors in gold moved in bloodied, exhausted harmony with sword-wielding female soldiers in chainmail. They were being pushed back step by step. Each custodian or sister falling opened up another hole in the rapidly diminishing Imperial line. Land's raider vibrated with the squeal of its high-powered Volkite arrays. Creatures and legionaries farther back in the enemy horde ignited beneath the beams, spreading the flames to their closest brethren. Zephon rose again, clambering back up the crew ladder. The metal rungs bowed beneath his weight as he opened the cupola and looked out at the battle.
Blood of the Angel.
What now? Land barked. The Archimandrite. It is here.
Unlikely, given that the Archimandrite is almost certainly dead.
It is time, she had canted,
and Land had mourned her treachery in disbelieving silence. He refused to follow her whims. He wouldn't turn his back on the Omnissiah.
It is here,
Zephon repeated. He reached for his chainsword, gunning it loudly in the oppressive red-lit crew bay. Land turned in his seat, reaching for the periscope. He dragged a sleeve across his face to clean his stinging eyes and peered into the lenses. The thing he saw was bathing squads of retreating sisters in coruscating beams of darkfire energy, atomizing them in sweeping arcs. Custodian spears broke against its plating. Lascannon fire skewed aside from its flickering shields. And yet,
that, he said, is not the Archimandrite.
Devram Sevik had named his knight Aquila from the Ashes. He had worked on its tiltplate himself, daubing the new sigil of House Viridian with his own hand. As much as he was a man who revered the peerless work of sanctified artistry armourers and sacristans in their maintenance of a knight suit, he was also given to a personal flourish here and there. And so the imperial eagle upon his tiltplate was more stylized than the stenciled ubiquity of most, with flaring wings and trails of plumage below as it took wing above a field of black ash.
Engaging,
he voxed to Jaya, to his fellow scions, to anyone still drawing breath and capable of hearing. Aquila from the Ashes crashed bodily into the Archimandrite at full stride, shoulder charging the machine with a hammer blow bang and the choral whine of protesting warping metal. They stood deadlocked, living machine flesh against industrial piston muscles, metal grinding, armor scraping, spraying sparks. Aquila from the Ashes had size and weight against the Archimandrite's original husk, but the Archimandrite was blasphemously altered now. The fruits of the Fabricator General's vision and the possessing demon's strength shoved back against the taller machine, its taloned feet seeking purchase and clawing into the nameless material of the webway's ground. Devram's cockpit flooded with alarms and warning runes. He felt his suit's stance buckling as the creatures around his knees began hacking away at his stabilizers. A strained look at one of his torso feed screens showed the custodians and sisters fighting their way to him, but they were fighting through an ocean of heaving, seething flesh with mere mortal blades. It was down to him. This deed would mark his shield or mark his grave. Enough left for a 4-second burst. Devram forced his gun limb up, sacrificing his last shot against the beasts around his legs, jamming the Gatling cannon into the Archimandrite's sloping, featureless face. It cycled live, rotating, spinning. His knee buckled, burst. He fell, the last 4 seconds of his ammunition screaming wide, arcing up into the golden mist as wasted thunder. The sickening lurch in his stomach told him what the failing picked feeds didn't, as his knight toppled sideways. Impact gels squirted from his support cradle to cushion him, but the excretors were poorly maintained. His helmed head slammed against the cockpit wall, and something, the wall, his helmet, crunched. His visor went black, denying all input. Unseeing, feeling hot wetness in his mouth, Devram fought to pull his helmet clear. Fingers that had turned suddenly clumsy scraped at the helmet's bindings, as all around him metal bent, wrenched, tore. The pressure of enclosing metal was unrelenting, first squeezing him into his throne, then crushing him into it, breaking his knees, his shoulders, his hips, his elbows, his ribs with vicious slowness. He screamed as he was compacted beneath the Archimandrite's iron tread, silenced only when his neck and jaw gave with wet, clicking snaps. The creature stepped over the malformed remains of the taller machine, unknowingly crushing Sevik's hand-painted tilt shield into a mangled ruin. It hunted the anathema's daughters now, and all else was but a distraction. Its lessers among the weaker choirs lashed out blindly, unable to even sense the human maiden slaughtering them. The weakest of them all, the most wretched and insignificant within their ranks, dissolved even before the fall of the daughters' killing blades. The demon of the first murder was prey to no such gullible weakness. It didn't need to sense them or see them in order to kill them. Its clustered node of hunger senses flowed outwards over the hundreds of warring bodies, sensing the dissolution of its own kind. Wherever its lessers were drained of their strength, wherever their corpuses hemorrhaged potency, there it turned its guns. Blinded by the sister's soullessness, it hunted the holes in its perceptions, firing streaming volleys of solid shot or bolts of dark energy wherever its kindred suffered against foes it couldn't see. The weapons so preciously crafted by ancient hands and recovered by Arkan Land did their duty once again, chewing through the embattled sisters with murderous precision. It raked them with explosive fire or reaved them down with energy beams. One it even managed to destroy by crushing her beneath its foot when it sought to impale the demon's stolen metal corpus. The demon exhaled blackness, its breath staining the golden mist around its maw. Its tongue slithered free, hanging long and undulating in the fog. It wasn't capable of pleasure beyond the fulfillment of its nature, but there was satisfaction here. These hollow impressions of human females were far easier to kill when they could be torn apart with mortal weapons that vomited killing energy. Though it wasn't born of war, it sensed the ebb and flow of the battle around it. Each of the anathema's daughters' deaths was a lessening of pressure against the creature's pained perceptions. Each burst body let the warp's song grow louder once more. Every one that fell allowed the demon's lesser kindred to rise again, to fight harder. Floating war machines raged at the creature, blasting portions of its stolen body apart. This punishment scarcely slowed it. Blood, old and new, painted its armor plating. The mist around its towering form was rancid and red with the shrieking of souls torn from their bodies since its arrival in this realm. Flesh machine growths added to its size, quivering pods and birth sacs of lesser demons in rapid gestation, and thrashing tentacles of sinewy veined metal that drilled through battle tanks to seek the mortals within. Its back-mounted weapon arrays annihilated whole swathes of the front lines, feeding the warfare while the demon itself paid no heed to it. The creature butchered only the golden and the war machines that sought to oppose its advance on the anathema's daughters. As the warp's song grew and grew, threatening an exulting crescendo, the demon of the first murder felt the defender's desperation gaining a stained, queasy brittleness. It cast its senses wide to see why, and immediately let forth a roar that was half canted across the new sphere and partially bellowed into the webway's relative reality. The anathema itself was within reach, stilled and crippled and bound to its throne. These last exhausted defenders were all that stood in the demon's path. Two of the dead golden approached in their metal shells, weapons crashing, ripping yet more shards of armor flesh free. The demon lashed back with its tendrils, hammering one of them away, sending it tumbling into the ranks of the creature's own kindred to be pried open and the meat within devoured. It lifted the second in its coiling grip, smelling a familiar soul. It knew this one.
End of Empires!
It voxed, screamed and canted.
End of Empires! was.
Land made a sound in the back of his throat, one he wasn't proud of. He had to swallow before he could speak. Even the custodians were falling back from what the Archimandrite had become. It had downed Sevik within mere heartbeats. It killed one of the 10,000's dreadnoughts as quick as Land could blink. It lifted another in its tentacles, and...
What in the Omnisire's name will your chainsword do against that?
Very little, Zephon replied. Yet still he gunned it. Bring us in closer.
Arkan did so, his eyes locked to the vision's feeds.
Baroness Darkus, Zephon voxed, I require your aid.
Zephon climbed out onto the tank's roof. A second later, Land heard the thruster bark of the Blood Angel's jump pack igniting. Sagittarius was drowning, or suffocating. He didn't know which. He was struggling to breathe in the womb fluid of his coffin, each inhalation coming with the coppery taste of blood and a sour tang of oil. Whatever was left of his physical form, even Sagittarius had never been sure how much of himself remained inside the coffin, banged and thumped against the life support sarcophagus, sloshing in the amniotic fluid, but no longer submerged within it. Leaking. That thought held primacy in the darkening light of his perceptions. Crippled. Hurt. Leaking. He faced ahead, trying to raise arms that wouldn't obey. He had to pull himself out of the monster's tendrils. His weapons clunked, devoid of ammunition for hours. His chassis, alive with warning readings for so long already, was held together only by dumb luck. Yet he charged the Archimandrite. Limping and bleeding and ammo-starved, he charged it as it stepped over the dead knight. There had been no choice. Its cannons were devastating the faltering Imperial lines.
Only in death does duty end.
One blow was all he'd been able to land. A shattering strike from his fist that ripped the plating from the Archimandrite's chest, revealing a subdermal layer of secondary ablative plate. And then he was in the creature's clutches, hauled from the ground. To his shame, he cried out when his right arm tore free. He had no nerves in his dreadnought shell, but the synaptic backlash of being mutilated was all too real. The Archimandrite brandished the ripped limb, still spitting with sparks, before hurling it away into the seething tides below. Sagittarius's world lurched as he was lifted even higher, the whine of protesting metal resounding in his ears through the murky, muffled coffin. He felt the pressure in his thigh as the demon took a firmer grip, then the wrenching jolt of dislocation that followed. Another crack of synaptic feedback coursed through his revenant flesh. Malfunctioning systems railed at him. Empty weapons cried out for him to fire. Turbines screamed as a figure in bloody red thudded onto the Archimandrite's shoulder. The Blood Angel, Zephon, cleaved down with a two-handed blow of his chain blade, the sword ripping into a tendril's joint where flesh met machine in unholy fusion. The sword rose and fell, tearing away chunks of bloody metal, spitting its own teeth as its revving track was fouled by gore and dense armor. The Archimandrite pivoted, but the Blood Angel's jump pack spurted stabilizing gas jets, long enough for a fifth blow to bite deep into the carved wound. The tendril deformed with the damage, gushing oil and slime as it fell limp, dropping Sagittarius into the melee below. His last sight before plunging into the battling bodies was the Archimandrite's left hand closing around the Blood Angel's torso, dragging him from his unstable perch. Sagittarius rolled with all the grace of an overturned sand turtle, clawing his remaining fist into the ground and dragged himself back.
Five!
He heard Zephon vox, the Blood Angel's voice marred by strain for the first time.
Four!
Zephon thrashed in the beast's grip, laying into the machine's forearm with his damaged chainsword.
Three!
A lucky nick at the wrist tore a fluid-wet spillage of cabling from its housing, weakening the grip before it fully closed. The Blood Angel fired his jump pack, red ceramite scraping against the Archimandrite's clutching fingers as he boosted free, straight up.
Two!
With a grace any winged being would envy, the Blood Angel twisted in the air, angling his propulsion to veer him back to the Imperial line.
One!
The bandolier of grenades maglocked to the back of the Archimandrite's head,
detonated in incendiary harmony, sending shrapnel rainstorming across the embattled lines. Demons near to the detonation howled at the punishment delivered to their predator monarch. The Archimandrite, missing a significant portion of its hunchback and both shoulders, staggered forwards, emitting a shriek that the true war machine was incapable of producing. "Engaging," came Jaya's voice in Zephon's helm. She had expended her ammunition hours before, even depleting Torolek's reserves. Her sword limb was a cracked ruin. It had shattered against a warhound after cutting through the bare metal and severing the leg at the thigh. Lacking any other recourse, she was down to clubbing with the broken hilt and her ammo-starved gun limb, doing her best to guard the front ranks from harm by warding them from the Archimandrite's onslaught with her ion shield. Zephon sensed the signal. Jaya forced her knight into a sprinting run, charging as Sevik had charged, heaving her castigator's weight against the staggering Archimandrite. Hunched as she was, she found herself face to face with the Mechanicum's creation, looking down into the broken cranial armor left in the wake of the grenade's detonation. Fluids ran and bubbled in scorched cables. Fleshy matter was burned against the insides of the dome, what had once been Hieronymus' brain and spinal column. The incinerated remnants still quivered with impossible life. "End of empires," she heard in her mind. In the same second, warning chimes began singing their familiar song. The creatures were swarming around her knees, and she had no means of shoving them away. The custodians and sisters were too far back to reach her. Jaya reversed her grip on the control levers, throwing the knight into a leaping backstep, coming down awkwardly on the flesh of the demons around her. Freed from the pressure of her weight, the Archimandrite overbalanced and stumbled forwards, beating the rising, energized remains of Jaya's sword limb. The uppercut blow pounded into the machine's ruptured chest plating, sinking all the way to Jaya's elbow joint. "For Sevik," she spat into her external speakers. "For the Emperor!" The Archimandrite's only reply was to slump, powerless, dead. For precious seconds they remained there together, fused at the point of death. Her cockpit shook as the creatures beneath her began crawling and cutting their way upwards, ascending her knight's savaged armor plating. The Archimandrite began to topple, dragging the knight down with it. Jaya locked her stabilizers and compensator balances, buying her a few more seconds of standing upright. Her gloved hands scrabbled for the ejection release, but it had either not functioned since its initial repairs or fallen into uselessness during the days of fighting. The seals blew in the hatch above her, but her throne remained locked in place. She heard the first creature reach the top of the castigator's carapace, its talons pulling at the seal-blown hatch. Yet when it ripped away, a figure in arterial red stood silhouetted and haloed in the golden mist. It reached down and offered her its shining metal hand. Jaya grabbed it, immediately hauled up into the Blood Angel's grip. She barely had time to suck in a breath before his turbines kicked in and sent them skywards, shaking every bone and pulling every muscle in her body. They hit the ground no gentler. Zephon's armor was built to withstand the pressures of his short-burst flight, but Jaya felt something snap inside her when they thudded onto the misty ground behind the custodians and sisters in the front lines. The Blood Angel didn't release her, half carrying her into the dim bay of Lan's Volkite-squealing grav raider. One-armed and one-legged, Sagittarius lay on the tank's internal decking, taking up almost half of the bay. The stylized helm that housed his sensorium relays stared up at her with shattered eye lenses. "Dawn," he intoned, drawling and unfocused. Jaya had no idea what he might mean.
"Something is,"
said Arkenland, looking right through the vision slit. His curse was a breathy whisper as he blinked, tired, gritty eyes.
"Teeth of the cock!"
Jaya turned towards the techno-archaeologist. The unhealthy radiance of the view screen was gone from the explorator's features. Instead, he was bathed in white light streaming through the vision slit. Dust motes danced in the beam of illumination.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"I don't know,"
Arkan stammered.
"It looks like the sun is rising."
and, in a sunless realm, the sun rose at last. The light of dawn was palpable on Ra's armour as well as his skin. It was a pressure, a presence with searing physicality. The enemy hordes felt it as acid on their skin. The creatures, demons, no matter what secular truths held strong, lost what little order they had ever possessed.
The anathema!
Ra heard their frantic agony, as a sick scraping on the edges of his mind.
The anathema comes! The sun rises!
The Emperor's features were those of one born in the wildlands of ancient Eurasia. His skin was a Terran blend of bronze and burnt umber, his eyes darker still, his hair darkest of all. The long black fall of his hair was held by a simple circlet crown of metal leaves, binding the mane back from his face so he could fight, more practical than regal. He moved as a man moved, coming through the straining ranks of his guardians on foot, pushing through the press of bodies on the rare instances they didn't instinctively move aside for him. He wore gold, as all of his guardians wore gold. The same sigils of Terran unity and imperial nobility that showed on their armour were cast thricefold upon his own. His armour joints didn't growl with the crude industrial snarl of mass-manufactured legionary plate, but purred with the song of older, purer technologies. On his back, held by a simple strap against his flowing red cloak, was an ornate bolter of black and bronze. In his hand he carried a sword, one that looked nothing like the blade portrayed in the victory murals and illustrated sagas. By the standards of Terran lords and kings, it was inarguably beautiful, but in the grip of the ruler of an entire species, it was, perhaps, rather plain. A weapon to wield, a tool for shedding blood, not an ornament to be admired. Impossibly complicated circuitry latticed its blade, black and coppery against a silver so hallowed that it was almost blue. In other wars, on other worlds, he had greeted his custodians with subtle telepathy, speaking their names as he passed them before a battle. Here he was more restrained, moving to the embattled front rank without offering any acknowledgement at all. Of the Neverborn, some broke ranks and fled. These cowardly shards of their vile masters knew that destruction had come. Some tore into each other, cannibalizing their kindred for strength in the face of destruction. Some lost what little grasp they had on corporeality, their forms melting and dissolving before the sword-wielding monarch even reached the front lines. The strongest raged at the sin of his existence. With a gestalt bellow loud enough to shake the windless air of this alternate reality, they fought to reach their arch-enemy. Ra was at the Emperor's right side, spear whirling, lashing out to punch through the amorphous bodies of flailing blue creatures that wailed through their many mouths. Sweat baked his face inside his helm. The blood in his muscles was heavier than liquid lead.
"Orders, sire!"
The Emperor raised his sword in a two-handed grip. As his knuckles tightened, the geography of circuitry ignited along the blade's length, spitting electrical fire and wreathing the sword's length in flame. He didn't speak. He didn't look at any of his warriors. The sword came down. The webway caught fire.